Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we've been reading The Red Arrow by William Brewer. But first, book news, and the Dublin Literary Award has been announced, the winner has been, which is a really large award of 100,000 euros,
I
believe. So it's quite transformative.
And chosen by the librarians of the world, which is so lovely.
We love this award. And it was won by The Art of Losing by Alice Zeniter, translated by Frank Wynne, I think from the French. I'm sure we've read books translated by him before, and he, one that I didn't enjoy, but he won previously for, was Atomized by Michel Houellebecq. And so he has spoken about how this has transformed his career, because that win a few years ago enabled him to do this for a living, essentially. So The Art of Losing, maybe we should add to the list. I say this and then I don't write it down, and we've got a list that's in the ether we've been adding to.
Maybe we should go back and listen to the podcast and write down our own recommendations.
I'm writing it down.
Big circle next to that. Great job.
Yes. So I've just written that down now. I think that's all the book news for this week. But now on to our book of the week. It's The Red Arrow by William Brewer. And this was recommended by Annie. So Annie sent me a beautiful photo a couple of weeks ago of a lovely stack of books, which we always love to see. And it must have caught me in the middle of a busy day, because I saw it. I thought, yes, I love it when people send me photos of books. This is great. And there might have been a, you know, which one would you like to read? And then it disappeared from my memory. So when Annie contacted me to say, what are we reading this week? I just said, you pick, you know, whatever you want.
And honestly, I had been in the same situation. I went back to that picture and saw this one was the shortest. And I thought, great. And I love the cover. And I don't know much else about it, but I was trying to, you know, choose something a bit different.
I think
feel
that
like
says
I've been in a bit of a rut. You
that
know?
Says it all about us.
Yeah.
You know, we love a cover.
We're on the go.
We love a short book. Yes, we're on the go. So The Red Arrow. So William Brewer is 33. He's American and was born and raised in West Virginia. He now lives in Oakland. This is his debut novel, but he's also a poet. So he is the author of I Know Your Kind, which was selected for the National Poetry Series in the US in 2016 or 2017. That was praised by Ocean Vuong, whose book we read On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous, and who also is a poet. So he's been described as America's poet laureate of the opioid crisis. So I think that poetry collection was dealing with the opioid crisis, particularly in West Virginia, and some of the dynamics there that he saw as he was growing up. So that's been one of his themes. This is his debut novel. So William Brewer also has suffered from depression during his life and had an experience where he took some mushrooms. I've forgotten the scientific.
Psilocybin.
So he took some psilocybin mushrooms, and that in about 2019, he says that cured him in effect, or certainly greatly relieved his suffering of his mental anguish. And that's been quite a landmark experience for him. And before that, he says that before that, he had all these thoughts and ideas, but the writing wouldn't come. And then after the mushrooms, he was able to write, and he had this impetus to write, and that's what generated the book. The Red Arrow is the story of a struggling author who has suffered from depression, who lives in Oakland but used to live in West Virginia, who has taken some mushrooms that has really helped him with his depression, and so he's now felt able to write a book. And he then has a deal with true to life. But the predicament he's in is that he's said to his publisher that he would write this book about the big spill, this big oil spill in West Virginia, and the book isn't coming. And so he's failed to do it.
Mm. He spent all the advance.
And so in the end, where we meet him, he's been asked instead, since he's failed to deliver the book, to ghostwrite a memoir of a famous physicist who they think is tipped to win the Nobel Prize. Mm. So he's in Italy because the physicist has now gone missing. So that's a problem.
Mm.
And so it's a really fun premise, and he's on this sort of speeding train, or this, I think, just a fast train in Italy, which is the Italian name translates to Red Arrow. Yeah. He's rushing towards Modena, where he's hoping the physicist will be, so that he can meet his end of the bargain. So he's worried that otherwise he'll have a huge debt, mm. because of course he had the advance, which he's spent. Meanwhile, his wife is quite estranged because he hasn't treated her very well. So we meet him on the train, and the question is, will he find the physicist and be able to finish ghostwriting the memoir? And it's received a lot of praise. It's been described as exquisite by LA Times. Nathan Hill has blurbed it. Nathan Hill wrote The Nix, which I really enjoyed. He was here in Adelaide a couple of years ago. He said it's deeply insightful and often hilarious. And there was another interesting review on, it was either Goodreads or Amazon, where one reader said a lot of people have said they really relate to it in terms of the experience of depression. And one reader said it was like all of the feelings, but you can't express them. And it reminded them of the sort of post-pandemic world, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. they felt that we're in this zone of there's all this stuff that's happened, and it's almost hard to know where to start or what to say about it, which is sort of the struggle that this narrator is having in the novel. What did you think, Annie?
Well, the first thing I said when I got here today was, I'm sorry I chose this. I hope you loved it. But I really didn't. I mean, I haven't finished it yet. I'm probably about halfway through. It is a short novel and it's not difficult reading, but I have just found it a struggle because it is quite boring. I think I'm starting to get into the meat of it now, and I don't know if I'll keep going with it. It'll be interesting to see how far along you are. One of the problems with this book is, as you say, too much information and not knowing where to start. I think it's a very big ask for a debut novel to present a character who is miserable, who is very self-aware, who promises that he gets better over the course of the novel because of this treatment that he receives. More on that later. He keeps kind of flagging that, you know, things will pick up, but we've got to understand the weeds first before we get through them. It's kind of a story within a story within a story, and I don't care about any of them because there's no attention given to why we should care or what is actually happening. It takes you a little while to kind of get the fact that they're in Italy because he's booked this whole honeymoon with the advance that he then couldn't get back and didn't deliver the book. So then they're going through this pretty miserable sounding honeymoon, knowing that you're spending money that you don't actually have. And he's trying to find this physicist, which, what's the physicist got to do with anything? I don't understand that yet. Maybe we'll get there in the end.
I think William Brewer had read a book by a real-life physicist.
Yeah. Okay, good. So, I mean, last night I described it to my partner as the anti-Hunter S. Thompson, because it's a road trip across Italy in this case, but you kind of spend a lot of time in America, and it's a trip, but you don't get any of the fun stuff and none of the kind of social commentary or interesting outsider perspectives. It's all very introverted and very introspective, and woe is me.
I don't think there's anything in Italy at all, really.
Well, barely. I mean, he's there, but he's not thinking about Italy. He just keeps being struck by the light and then being transported back to West Virginia. So, no, I'm very sorry that I chose this. But as you said, we couldn't find a bad review. So
no,
it's getting a lot of praise. I wonder if it's too American. But for me, I just couldn't find anything to grapple onto and anything to enjoy.
No, it was terrible. I'm so sorry. I couldn't read it, Annie. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but the funny thing was, because it's been so well reviewed, and I'm very happy to be in the minority on books and happy to push against the tide, but I did then go searching to see if anyone had felt the same way or reviewed it. And the only one I could find was Publishers Weekly said it was cerebral and somewhat muddled, and in the end it didn't quite cohere.
Oh, okay. That doesn't bode well for me finishing it.
Oh, no, you don't need to finish it. But But what the other thing that happened was, so I didn't finish it. I knew fairly early on this is not the book for me, and we'll go into all of that. But then I kept being drawn back in because I felt like, what am I missing? Yes. I must be missing something.
Yep.
So I've ended up skimming here, reading other scenes, seeing if it got better, seeing if there was something to explain, or because a lot of people talk about how incredibly well he describes the experience of depression, and which he calls the mist.
Mm.
And so I, because that hadn't come through to me at all from the early, other than tangentially from the early part, and so I was looking for that part of it. But
and I think that is accurate. I mean, I think I was thinking a lot about Sorrow and Bliss while I was reading this, because I think in that, you know, you've got an unlikable character, but you understand her struggle and you do feel for her, and you can see why the people in her life, you can see that she's charismatic, but because this is so internal,
I think you had a bit more insight into her, but she was funny. She had a few saving graces. Mm. She was very funny.
Mm.
So I laughed out loud at times reading that book, and that's a very subjective thing. It seemed very true to life. Mm. And to be fair, I suppose that was a more traditional narrative where she was interested in telling you a story. This one I don't think is as interested in telling us a story rather than exploring ideas. And so it is going, as you say, it will be more challenging. So I suppose Sorrow and Bliss is more accessible. Mm. It's an easier entry point to sort of see what would that be like to be that, to be in her head.
Mm.
And I am, having read Sorrow and Bliss, and we did an episode of it, I'm conscious of the fact that I haven't had that experience of depression or mental health issues. I know when we reviewed Sorrow and Bliss, one listener did write to us and say that perhaps we weren't, well, maybe more me, weren't very sensitive to that experience.
Yeah.
And we were coming at it, and I think I said,
as a novel.
I think I said, well, I was reading it as a novel, and I think the idea with a novel is that you empathise with someone that you haven't had that experience, and the beauty of fiction is that it allows you to walk a mile in someone else's shoes and you develop empathy.
Mm.
And but it's up to the book to do that. It's
I
up
think
to
so too.
You, well, and I you, think you, sorry, it's you and the book.
And but I think if you want to write a biography, and if that is your lived experience, then that's, you can do that. But if you write a novel and present it as fiction, then it is kind of up for grabs in terms of a critical review to say, well, I did like this bit, I didn't like this bit, I didn't like the character. And if the character is based on yourself, then you are making yourself very vulnerable to criticism, which I think he's obviously done in this instance.
Oh,
I
for do sure. Think that the, so I'm just wary after Sorrow and Bliss.
I
don't want to – it's very hard to – I can't criticise this in terms of its depiction of depression. All I can say is whether as a novel it engaged me.
Mm. Like, I quite enjoyed some of the passages. He's got a good turn of phrase. I can see the poetry kind of coming through. And again, it was reminding me of Hunter S. Thompson in that kind of really long stream of consciousness sentences when he's rushing across America. They move from New York to LA. You know, they drive across America and there's this big one long whole page of all the little tiny country towns and rest stops that they drop off in, and the changing gradation of the countryside, and that I was kind of like, oh yeah, I can see if the whole novel was this, that's beautiful. But because it's, the structure is too intricate to support the very flimsy weight of the story, it doesn't work. So yeah, and I think there were beautiful passages. I mean, I wrote, he writes really well. It's an accurate portrait of depression. I think there are parts where he is crushed by this enormous weight of his own self-loathing. And he really, he describes himself several times as a grenade, like he's going to go off, and a very slow grenade. That's how he sees himself. And it is, it's pitiable, you know.
Mm.
But I also still didn't like him. I didn't care enough about the character and the story that he was trying to tell. Like, I think this character could fit well into a story, but as the narrator, at a point where he is over it, and so he kind of, it's not that he's minimising it, but that he...
it's in the past.
It's in the past. There's no narrative tension because he says, well, don't worry, I get better, but here's all the bad stuff. And so it's kind of like, oh, well, you need that to make sense of his story, but why do I care about his story? I can just stop reading.
Yeah. and we I did. But the other thing he does is go into the big spill in West Virginia. Mm. So we get flashbacks about that, which was meant to be about the book that he was going to write but didn't. And we also get some – there's a bit of physics theory, I think, that comes in. So this is from my skimming through towards the end. So there is quite a lot as well that's going on and it's all piled in. And I think he's spoken about having been through the mushrooms experience that it gave him this – real momentum, and he wanted to bring that to the novel. And so there's just a lot happening. I think his mind just works really quickly or actively, and he's trying to find a way
to represent that, to
express that. It's a lot. And I compare it with someone like David Foster Wallace, who is problematic but who wrote another – it's sort of bro-lit. Like this is bro-lit to me. It's another white dude writing about his issues. But, yeah, so as I said, he's problematic. But Infinite Jest, there is a section about Kate Gompert, who had depression, and it is exquisite. It is so funny.
Mm.
It's describing her in the hospital. All she wants to do is end her life. But if she can't do that, could they, you know, basically marijuana is the only thing that's ever helped her. She's trying to explain this to the psychiatrist, who's got no street smarts whatsoever. He's trying to clinically assess each gesture and movement that she makes. But it's so out of touch. She's running rings around him intellectually, but she's trapped there.
Well,
and so the absurdity of it is really comical.
Well,
he brings out the comedy.
Bunny.
And Binnie Kirschenbaum, Rabbits for Food. Exactly. Like someone who themselves has lived with a condition of depression or anxiety or other things, and yet is able to convert it into a really, really piercingly funny story, but also poignant and moving. And you feel for her. You understand the dilemma of the psychologist in the hospital, but you really feel for her because she says, at one point she says to him, Bob, and he repeats, Bob. And he's like mentally thinking, what is that? And she's just like exasperated because she's talking about Bob Hope. Yeah. And then she has to tell him the whole story. And she's just beside herself. Yeah. That to me gives me a real insight
and I guess,
into
as
that
saying,
mindset.
When there are so many incredible narratives of depression and mental illness, why does this one need to be in the world as a not quite so good facsimile?
No.
And I think while you were just talking, I've realised that part of the problem is that perhaps, all of those books that we're talking about meet the issue in the middle of it. And so, if you're confronted head on with this intense emotional distress, it is very hard to then turn your back on it and say, oh, well, I don't care about you. But I think because he's coming at it from such a distance, we don't have any narrative tension.
I agree. Yeah, those two examples and even Sorrow and Bliss have sort of picked because in Sorrow and Bliss I think it starts with that she and her husband have become estranged or something. Mm-hmm. Even Sorrow and Bliss have picked the dramatic moment, whereas he – and I love the fun premise of the failed author – needing to ghostwrite a physics memoir because he's bailed on his publisher and having to go and find the physicist could be really good. And it makes me think of Less by Andrew Gear, where you have the author who's then leaving the country because his ex-boyfriend is getting married, and there's comedy there. But this one, to me, having said I don't feel like I can judge the narrator because I haven't lived the same experience, but why is it that some books can cut through to me about that and some don't? To me, I think it comes down to tone. So he is, as you say, an unsympathetic character. He sounds entitled, and then he also does sound self-aware, but his attempts to sound funny or self-aware still sound really privileged and entitled. So he says, move to New York as one does. But no, not everyone gets to move to New York like that, but I see that he's trying to be sort of down on himself because it sounds like a cliche, but it's only a cliche for some people. And then it also has that autobiographical tone that I find insular and off-putting. So immediately if you say to me, this is a book about a struggling writer, it will put me off.
And then novels sometimes about imaginary novels just don't function. And I think in this, you know, he keeps referencing this great West Virginian novel that he's trying to write. Is this meant to be that? That's the other point that kept bugging me, because this isn't that either.
And he's also putting down West Virginia, which, you know, I guess he's from there, so maybe he can do that. But there's a tone that sounds snarky, and I hesitate to use that word, because what do I know about what he, the author or the narrator, is going through? But it comes across as snarky in a way that's quite distancing. Yeah. So it's a risk. At best, you could say it's a risk that he takes. And likewise, as you point out, the physicist who we don't even meet, and with a capital P physicist, that's a very distancing technique as well, because again, he's not even a character really at this point. And Annie, there's no sense of Annie as a character. So it's very male centric, as I said, bro lit. And then it's sort of procedural. So this is why I struggle with these amazing reviews about, oh, he's such a gifted writer, because it just sounds like it's like a almost a memoir where you're going through the motions of, then we did this and then I did this. And so Annie had her interviews. We spent the next day walking Golden Gate Park. It's sort of uneventful.
The diary.
There's a lot of pedestrian diary sort of sections, or like an extended CV. You know, the Troop was released, which is his award-winning or, you know, successful collection. It was met with success. And you know, then he says it had big positive reviews, which again,
in all the places that you wanted good reviews,
in all the places. And it does sound like he's saying that with some self-loathing, because he's still down on himself despite that. But it also is very self-absorbed. It's like all he can think about is his book, his writing, his failures, his self-destruction. And it's also sort of those sections read to me like he could be just writing a magazine article about, this is how I started out. You know, it was started with, I was the art kid, and then wasn't very good. So then I tried stories, and lo and behold, one of them met with huge success. It was like journalist interviewing him for a, you know, a Sunday paper lift out or something.
I think often, you know, I get really annoyed with especially children's picture books when it's like just a book about the joy of books. And I get annoyed at this idea that let's bash someone over the head with how good are books. We love books. Books are so good. But it's kind of like, no, but people love books because there's something in them. And just a book about books isn't really a book. You've just – it's like taking a picture of a thing that you love rather than actually just having the thing that you love. And I think this kind of gets into that too, because it keeps talking about, well, I was going to write this and this is – I would have rather read the collection of stories that he published – The Troop, that actually sounded like there were some good moments in there, and there were some good scenes when he's with his family back in West Virginia, and his dad has become this kind of obsessed, very insular, sad man on the couch, and he has bought the entirety of the Blockbuster Video that closed down, and it's in his basement, and so he's got this kind of replica Blockbuster complete with the carpet and the shelving and everything, and it's just like this relic of another time. That was a bit where I was kind of like, oh, if we follow this thread, this is something, you know.
That could have been really funny, wasn't.
No, and it was just sad.
There's the idea that the Great Spill was so traumatic for him that he's not able to write about it. And that concept can be very powerful. And I'm thinking of Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut, where he writes around something that's so deeply traumatic, the bombing of Dresden, that he can't say it. And that can be incredibly powerful.
And function as a work of art. But I think there's a difference between art and catharsis. Yeah, and if this is catharsis, we didn't need to read
this
it.
This is more like a brain dump. And then there's the bit, oh, you haven't got to the end. Anyway, there's a fun bit at the end that looks like a spreadsheet.
Oh, I saw the spreadsheet. Yeah, I didn't read it because I didn't want to spoil it for myself. But
you don't need to.
Okay.
No.
I was excited that there was a bit of Jennifer Egan kind of different stylistic challenging the
narrative. Well, that was the other thing. On the back, on the back.
We're really sticking the boot in
now. The back blurb on mine.
Which I kept turning to it because I kept wanting some structure.
The back blurb on mine is written on the side, as in landscape, not in portrait orientation, for no reason that I can tell other than they're trying to be – it sort of seems gimmicky
sending
to me.
You on a trip.
It's trying to, it's like it's trying really hard to tell you this is an original sort of book and yet everything in it is so – to me feels like it's been done before and done better.
Yes.
I'm sorry, William.
Yes, but don't listen, William.
But
well, yeah, just and because that, but he, that comes down to the publishers, you know, trying to make, trying to stand out, trying to be the gimmick, trying to be, this is the next Sally Rooney. This is, that's marketing. I can roll my eyes at that if the book is good enough. But I mean, it's feasible that someone purchased this book 10 years ago and gave him some money and he didn't write it and then he wrote the story of him not writing it. Isn't that a feasible after taking some mushrooms?
Yeah, that is feasible. So.
Yeah, give this one a miss, folks. Or tell us if you loved it. But
please tell us if we're missing something. And I give a blanket apology if I haven't been very sensitive about some of the issues that William and others have faced.
Yeah, but I'd much rather read Michael Pollan, whose recent book is about coffee and mushrooms and one other drug that I can't remember.
Who's referenced in the Red Arrow.
Yeah, opium. About the way that drugs can really alter people's mental states and for the better.
Yeah. Or read a magazine article where William Brewer tells us his story of doing that.
Yeah.
So there we are. That was the Red Arrow. Really sorry about that.
Sorry to you.
Rant. just didn't work for us.
Either of us.
Seems to have worked for everybody else in publishing. We're now officially going to make a list and we'll be able to let you know what we'll be reading next very soon.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go. You can email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at Mr. _Annie.
Fantastic. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.